ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 7. Text number 42. And that's the end of the chapter. We'll go through chapter 8. Probably 1 and 2. So, title of the chapter 42 is Further Inquiries by Vidura. This is a dialogue, Vidura and Maitreya. It's in the north country, north of Vrindavan, so it's in the mountains. The time sequence is after Krishna spoke Uddhava Gita and Krishna left the world. Finished his pastimes. The last part of his pastime was Krishna speaking Uddhava Gita. Vidura is on pilgrimage and he happens to go to the same place in the same forest where Krishna just spoke Uddhava Gita and then left. And he finds Uddhava. Oh, Uddhava Ji, how nice to see you here in the forest. And he makes many inquiries. Uddhava speaks for some time. They spend the whole night. It was actually that very morning that Krishna left. So Uddhava's a... You can guess what kind of state Uddhava was in. And he just wants to talk about Krishna. He does. The whole night. And the next morning Uddhava leaves. He was given him service by Krishna. That service was to take that message that he heard from him to the devotees of Nara Narayan Rishi in Badrinath. He said, I actually had wanted to give them my own association, but my pastimes are over, so you do it on my behalf. You're my representative. Uddhava had some service to keep his life intact after Krishna had gone. And Uddhava, before departing that next morning, told Vidura that just before Krishna left, he mentioned you. He said, very soon, Vidura is going to come here. And Maitreya, I can give you some service. You can speak the same message to Vidura. So when Vidura heard this from Uddhava, Vidura was joyed. Krishna, just before leaving, was thinking of me. And then he was feeling great separation also. Krishna's gone. So in that mixed emotion, he went in the direction that Uddhava indicated Maitreya had gone, and he found Maitreya. He began presenting questions to Maitreya, particular topic that he chose was the Lord's creation. So he explained, Maitreya explained a lot in previous chapters about there's two parts of creation. What the Lord does and what Lord Brahma does. Sarga and Visarga. Creation and sub-creation. So, largely he spoke about creation, what Lord Vishnu does. And then a whole lot of discussion after that about so many things. The appreciation of perfected souls who can explain these things nicely, and the necessity of such association, the value of such association, the unique association, unique importance of association of pure devotees, why people don't get it, why people get it. So, Vidura then asks some more questions. They're very profound questions, like, how is it possible for a living entity to become conditioned? Because they're in quality, one like the Lord, and not only that, the Lord is within their heart. In the presence of the Lord, they can become conditioned. And the Lord is kind, He's merciful, He's right there. How does a living entity become conditioned? How does it happen? It's very mysterious. And other related mystery questions. Maitreya answers. By the agency of the Lord's potency, it happens. He permits it to happen because the living entity's attitude towards the Lord is not such that he can honor the immediate presence of the Lord. He wishes us to enjoy separately, so he has to be covered, and here's how he's covered, and so on. So, Vidura's illusion is dispelled. And then he asks another chapter's worth of questions. Pursuing the first line, but more about creation, and then he goes into sub-creation. And many details, many, many encyclopedic details. And then he finishes his questions and says, whenever I, you're very merciful, so whatever I didn't ask, you please answer that too. Last verse of the chapter, Shukadeva Goswami said, thus, the chief of the sages, who was always enthusiastic about describing topics regarding the personality of Godhead, began to narrate the descriptive explanation of the Puranas being so infused by Vidura. He was very much enlivened to speak on the transcendental activities of the Lord, because of the transcendental activities of the Lord, because creation is one of the activities of the Lord, and specific at the beginning and at the end, Vidura makes mention of that. This is one of the activities of the Lord, therefore he's interested, and then there's details and details that I'm interested in, but because there's activities of the Lord, I'm attracted. So Maitreya is attracted to describe for that reason, because he's very attracted to Krishna, especially after having heard Uddhava Gita. Maitreya began, being thus invited by Vidura to speak, appeared to be smiling because he actually felt transcendental bliss. The great sage Maitreya Muni said to Vidura, the royal dynasty of King Kuru is worthy to serve the pure devotees because all the descendants of that family are devoted to the personality in Godhead. You are also born in that family, and it is wonderful that because of your attempt, the transcendental pastimes of the Lord are becoming newer and newer at every moment. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The great sage Maitreya thanked Vidura and praised him by reference to his family glories. the Puru dynasty, were full of devotees of the personality of Godhead and was therefore glorious. Because they were not attached to the impersonal Brahman or the localized Paramatma, but were directly attached to Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead, they were worthy to render service to the Lord and his pure devotees. Because Vidura was one of the descendants of that family, naturally, he engaged in spreading wide the ever new glories of the Lord. Maitreya felt very happy to have such glorious company as Vidura. He considered the company of Vidura most desirable because such association can accelerate one's dormant propensity for devotional service. So Puru is, one of the descendants of Puru is Kuru. So it's sometimes the Kuru dynasty, here it's the Puru dynasty. Puru is the one of many sons who, when the father wanted to give up his old age for their youth, he did so. So he was very, this obedience, in this case, you know, the father was like very qualified, but also a little unqualified. But simply wanting to be of service to his father. Ultimately, the personality of Godhead released him from that old age and it was given back to his father. But it's something similar to the Prachetas. Those are further in the Bhagavatam also, but the Prachetas, they were sons of King Prachinibari. And King Prachinibari was too much attached to Karmakanda rituals, although he was also in the line of kings from Swayambhuva Manu and Uttanapada and Dhruva, and that line of great kings. So he was also a devotee, but too much attached. So Narada delivered King Prachinibari, but before that happened, King Prachinibari requested his sons, the Prachetas, to go prepare themselves for producing good praja, like, you know, as Prajapatis. So their immediate response was, yes, simply because it's his request. Like Lord Ram, hearing Dasarath say, you're not the king, and you're off in exile for 12 years. It was yes. That foregoing of one's personal interest and accepting of a spiritual interest or an indication from superior authority, this is, it won the favor of Lord Shiva for the Prachetas, so much so that he gave them stotras and his benediction that they would soon see Lord Vishnu, even though they were doing austerities to have good praja. And they saw Lord Vishnu, and they offered beautiful prayers. Amongst those beautiful prayers was this wish, or this appreciation to Lord Vishnu, that the greatest of all benedictions that can be offered is the association of pure devotees. Because when you have the association of your devotees, you have the association of the Lord, and you finish your material business, which was what happened to them. Their encounter with Lord Shiva wasn't that he gave them something material, he gave them the same stotras that he meditates upon, and thus achieves the association of Lord Vishnu. So Vidura is in the line of Puru, and the kings from that line of Puru were all great devotees of the Lord and thus qualified to serve other devotees of the Lord and to serve the Lord. And he was feeling, he's expressing in a very cultured way his appreciation of being in Vidura's presence. And he's also appreciating the nature of his questions. His questions weren't about, you know, how can I get some more money, or how can I get some position, how can I get this material or that material thing. His question was about the Lord and his activities. Text 2, let me now begin on the Bhagavad Purana, which was directly spoken by the great sages, to the great sages, by the Personality of Godhead, for the benefit of those who are entangled in extreme miseries for the sake of very little pleasure. Now, the Bhagavad Purana was spoken by who? Sukadeva Goswami. So, but here it says, let me speak on the topics of the Bhagavad Purana, which was directly spoken to the great sages by the Personality of Godhead. There's another version of the Srimad Bhagavatam that was spoken by Narayan Rishi unto great sages, and Narada was one in that assembly. The purport. But it's the same, not a different, because the Bhagavatam isn't a creation. It's writing down that which was already known. When Vyasa wrote it, it was already known. And Vyasa didn't create it. Purport. The sage, Maitreya, proposed to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam because it was especially compiled and traditionally comes down in the disciplic succession for the solution of all the problems of human society. Only one who is fortunate can have the opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of pure devotees of the Lord. Under the spell of material energy, the living entities are entrapped in the bondage of many difficulties simply for the sake of a little bit of material happiness. They engage in fruitive activities not knowing the implications. Under the false impression of the body is the self, the living entities foolishly relate to so many false activities. They think that they can engage with materialistic paraphernalia forever. This gross misconception of life is so strong that a person suffers continually, life after life, under the external energy of the Lord. If one comes into contact with the book Bhagavatam, as well as the devotee Bhagavatam, who knows what the Bhagavatam is, then such a fortunate man gets out of the material entanglement. Therefore, Sri Maitreya Muni, out of compassion for the suffering men of the world, proposes to speak Srimad Bhagavatam first and last. Maitreya was asked by Vidura about many subjects, and what he's saying here is, I'm going to speak from the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam. Whenever we're asked questions, the notion is, or the how the application is, that we don't speak something unless it's on the basis of authority, and the best of all authority is this Bhagavad Purana. And what the Bhagavad Purana does is addresses the very root of conditioned souls' entanglement in the material world, as far as creation is concerned. And the release from that is just as same as it was discussed in a verse that we covered this morning. Very beautiful purport summarizing the conditioned living entities, the relationship between the individual soul and the supreme soul. Simply, one is a master and the other is a servant. However, in a deluded state, the one who's the servant thinks otherwise. And only by association can that delusional state be mitigated. And that, so association with pure devotees is that association. And in that association, the pure devotee wishes to teach the deluded soul the nature of the personality of Godhead and the linking process unto him. And the devotee, the one who is being released, they understand this is my opportunity. And therefore they're very eager to hear that science very carefully presented and to apply it. The last message was the one who is the speaker, a qualification they must carry is that they have no more material activities. Doesn't mean that they take the renounced order of life. It means that their activities are immersed. They're fully dedicated to the personality of Godhead. No more material activities. Those activities are fully spiritual. Just like Vyasadeva was a householder, Arjuna was a householder, so many in our specific line. Jayadeva Goswami, wonderful descriptions of his writing, Gita Govinda. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was a very strict sannyasi, enjoyed very much hearing the writings of Jayadeva Goswami. He didn't say, oh, he's a Grahastha, I can't hear his writings. They were fully transcendental, and he was, as he was. No, it's not ashram specific, it's consciousness related. And Maitreya is taking this as an opportunity presented by Providence, specifically by the presence of Vidura, asking the particular questions that Vidura is asking, to explain from the reference of Bhagavad Purana. And by so doing, the miseries of material existence will be uprooted, not only for him and Vidura, but for the world. Here we are, so many thousands of years later, receiving benefit. He's very happy. This is, okay, some time ago, text 3, inquisitive to know, Sanat Kumar, the chief of the boy saints, the Kumaras, accompanied by other great sages, inquired exactly, like you, about the truths regarding Vasudeva, the Supreme, from Lord Sankarshan, who is seated at the bottom of the universe. The Kumaras get around. Sometimes they're in Vaikuntha, sometimes they're at the bottom of the universe. They can travel wherever they like. So this is how the beginning of the Rudra Sampradaya takes place. The Kumaras receive knowledge from Lord Narayan, and it's in relation to Bhagavan, and so it's the same message as the Bhagavad Purana. Purport. This is in clarification of the statement that the Lord spoke directly on the Srimad Bhagavatam, because that was stated by Maitreya. So now he's explaining how that happens. When and unto whom the Bhagavatam was spoken is explained herewith. Questions similar to those put forward by Vidura were asked by the great sages like Sanat Kumar and Lord Sankarshan, The plenary expansion of the Supreme Lord Vasudeva answered them. Now somewhere, yeah, so it was the Kumaras plus other great sages. That's what it says in the verse. Some time ago, being inquisitive to know Sanat Kumar, chief of the Kumaras, accompanied by other great sages, so those other great sages were also able to come into the presence of Lord Narayan. At that time, Lord Sankarshan was meditating upon his Supreme Lord, whom the learned esteem as Lord Vasudeva. But for the sake of the advancement of the great learned sages, he slightly opened his lotus-like eyes and began to speak. No purport. The sages came from the highest planets down to the lower region. How'd they get there? Through the water of the Ganges. And therefore, their hair on their heads was wet. They touched the lotus feet of the Lord, which are worshipped by, with various paraphernalia, by the daughters of the serpent king, when they desire good husbands. The Ganges water flows directly from the lotus feet of Vishnu, and its course runs from the highest planet of the universe down to the lowest. Bhagiratha was trying to bring the course of the Ganges to release his forefathers that were in the lower regions. The sages came down from Satyaloka by taking advantage of the flowing water, a process of transportation made possible by power of mystic yoga. If a river flows thousands and thousands of miles, the perfect yogi can at once transport himself from one place to another simply by dipping in its water. Prabhupada described yogis that would do this daily. They would daily take bath in different holy places. And similarly, you know, their hair was wet, so they're walking about describing to people the different places they had just been. They had been to Puri, they had been to Haridwar, you know, in the same, like within several minutes. They had been to the mouth of the Ganges. Because by mystic power doesn't describe the technology, they have that instant transport system. Enter into the water and move. By the will of the Lord, those things can, there's descriptions when we were visiting in Jagannath Puri of brahmanas who were worshipping Lord Jagannath and would take their bath. There's one very elaborate one. Took their bath in Shweta Ganga, and when he dipped in the water at Shweta Ganga, he came up at Ganga Sagara. Like, you know, the brahmanas thing. Immersed himself in the water and then they come out of the water. When he came out of the water, he wasn't in Shweta Ganga anymore. He was at Ganga Sagara. And because he had the desire to experience that holy place. And he was very amazed. And when he came out of the water, there was a young, beautiful girl. And she said, "Oh, the Lord has made an arrangement for you to come. And I've been praying to have a qualified husband, and I was told, go to this very spot in a dream, go to this very spot, and your husband will emerge from the Ganga, and you're to marry." So, didn't know what to do. And he said, no, it's not inappropriate. It's the Lord's arrangement. That's why you came here. That's why he sent you here. So, they married. And the next day, he went to take bath in the Ganga, at Ganga Sagra, and he came out of the water and he was at Sweta Ganga in Puri. And didn't know what to do. So he just went about his service. Some years later, as he's finishing his puja, leaving the temple, there's his wife. And with her small son, because that evening they were married, apparently they had relations, and there was a son. And, you know, she reminded him that we're married, and this is your son. He said, no. We're not married, and I don't have any son. And some disagreement proceeded. And she's saying, I don't want to cause you any difficulty, but you're the father, you're my husband, you're married. So, again, how it got resolved. It went to one of the main priests, and he was to resolve the issue. And the issue was to be resolved by giving her something impossible to do, and that would prove that it wasn't. But that's, I forget exactly how it ended up. The impossible manifested. That, you know, he realized, wow, it's true. And then the priest acknowledged, yeah, it's true. She was saying to him, I know that the reason you're saying you don't want to do this, want to acknowledge that we're married, is because you'll lose your position. And because if you're the one who's a priest in Puri is only to marry a brahmana, someone from Puri, and if you violate that, you lose your service. I get the details, an important part of the narration, but she exhibited to before the priest. She produced some ornaments that he had given at the time of their marriage. And when the man saw the ornaments, he couldn't deny it anymore. That's true. So, because of his honesty, he was accepted by the Mahant. Said, but now the problem is, we have to give some service to your son because it's outside of the rules. So he created another kind of service for the son to do. So there's like, you know, whatever the number of fixed services there are, he created another category and gave it to the son to do. So even non-mystic yogis that don't know the science, that sometimes can happen. You enter into the sacred water and you are transported elsewhere, other than by your will. Here's the purport. The sages coming down from Satyaloka by taking advantage of the flowing water, a process of transportation made possible by the power of mystic yoga. If river flows for thousands and thousands of miles, perfect yogis can at once transport himself from one place to another simply by dipping in its water. The Ganges is the only celestial river which flows throughout the universe, and great sages travel all over the universe via this sacred river. The statement that their hair was wet indicates that it was directly moistened by the water originating from the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu, the Ganges. Whoever touches the water of the Ganges to his head surely touches the lotus feet of the Lord directly and can become free from all bad effects of sinful acts. If, after taking a bath in the Ganges or being washed of all sins, a man guards himself against committing further sinful acts, then certainly he is delivered. But if he again takes up sinful acts, his bath in the Ganges is as good as that of the elephant, who nicely takes his bath in a river, but later spoils the whole thing by covering himself with dust on the land. So this is describing the scene where Sankarshan is situated at the bottom of the universe. He's situated at the bottom of the universe in part because he holds on his hoods the various planets of the universe, and he holds them like mustard seeds lightly, no effort. And at the time of cosmic annihilation, flames come from his mouth and engulfs the creation in fire. So he's doing different services for the personality of Godhead, one of which is maintenance and another which is one of the roles in the destruction of the universe. So that's where he situated. The sages that went there knew how to go and they knew where to find him, and they also wanted to hear these same topics. The four Kumaras, headed by Sanat Kumara, who all knew the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, glorified the Lord in rhythmic accents with selected words full of affection and love. At that time, Lord Sankarshan, with his thousands of raised hoods, began to radiate in effulgence from the glowing stones on his head. Report: the Lord is sometimes addressed as Uttama Shloka, which means one who is worshipped with selected words by devotees. A profusion of such selected words comes from a devotee who is fully absorbed in affection and love from the devotional service of the Lord. There are many instances in which even a small boy who was a great devotee of the Lord could offer excellent prayers in the choicest words for glorification of the pastimes of the Lord. In other words, without the development of fine affection and love, one cannot offer the prayers to the Lord very suitably. Who's that? A small boy who was a great devotee of the Lord could offer excellent prayers for Lord Maharaj. Anyone else? Maharaj. And he's saying those are the two prominent ones, particularly in the Bhagavatam. But many such examples, he's saying. So it's that the qualification is not age or education. Neither of them were highly educated. They were just small children, barely educated, and not mature in their wisdom, but very exuberant in their devotion. And with that qualification, they could speak very nicely, suitable prayers. And the Lord is very pleased. And those prayers, even to this day, like these discussions with Ms. Maitreya, is very elderly, and Vidura is very elderly. So their talks are very elevated. But the Kumara is also offering suitable prayers. They're like little boys speaking. So the point is that the qualification is not age or education, but it's devotion. And that which is suitable and very, very pleasing and very elevated can be heard. How did he know?
How did he also get benefited from the discussions?
Oh, how did Maitreya get benefit?
From our context, the conditioned existence also, the had even brothers of creation, of destruction, when it's true illusion in material existence. So how also it affects the conditioned souls when they hear about Lord's moment of creation?
Okay, thank you. If I've understood your question, let me say back what I've understood you're asking. Here's Maitreya, here's Vidura, they're having talks about creation. How is it beneficial to people like us to hear those talks? In many ways it's beneficial. Here's three or four. One of them is, as already stated, simply because it's in relation to the personality of Godhead. This is very hot. Because it's in relation to the personality of Godhead, it's uplifting. Simply for that reason. The same subject matter, minus the perspective of its relation with the personality of Godhead, has the opposite effect. It's covering, it's contaminating. It pulls one's consciousness down. What pulls one's consciousness up is because it's in relation to the personality of Godhead. Another is, in order to enter into the topics about the personality of Godhead as he acts in this world, when he performs his various pastimes, one will be guaranteed of having a wrong understanding of his form and his activities and his associates, because they're fully transcendental. If one has not had a proper or spiritual conception of the relation of things that are we're presently in contact with the Lord. So we're in a material atmosphere. If we don't understand those things that are all around us, how are we going to understand otherworldly things? Well, we won't. We'll misunderstand them. We'll hold a material conception towards the Lord's activities in his pastimes in the spiritual world, or when he descends and performs in the limas. So it's very important for us to have a proper understanding. At least a clear understanding that whatever happens, it's from the Lord, not otherwise. A mechanistic, material mechanistic understanding prevents one from having a proper conception of Krishna. Part of that, a further elaboration on that one is, because of being conditioned, whatever knowledge we have, it has provided us a predisposition to see in a mechanistic way. So part of the way of addressing that mechanistic way of seeing things is to dismantle it so that we can see in a divine way or a devotional way or a God-centered way. Another is to prepare us to speak to people who may not at all accept the divinity of Krishna. But if we just simply describe that things of this world happen because God made it so, they're not going to accept it unless we can explain how God made it so. So just like say, where does everything come from? And an atheist has his answer, and a theist has his answer. The theist has the answer, everything comes from God. But the atheist may then say, well, explain yourself. How is it that everything comes from God? Well, if the answer is, well, it says so in the scripture. For example, Sataputta would describe to me that there's a group of Christian creationists that were traveling about and making presentations at college campuses saying God created everything on the basis of the words of Genesis. And they have strong faith. But when scientists would present challenges based on scientific evidence, the only answer the creationist could come up with, well, it doesn't say that in the Bible. And for persons that are trained in rational approach to things, they were laughed off the stage. To such people in the audience, the scientist proved to have the right story, not the creationists. Those that are neutral bystanders, that they don't have a predisposition, more compelled by the scientists than by the creationists. However, so we may, similarly, we, in the course of encountering people that may have some piety, it's helpful to be able to explain the science behind the concept that everything comes from God. As an example, Professor Henry Stapp, S-T-A-P-H, from the University of California, Berkeley, or something like that, some university in the Berkeley area, the Bay Area, who was a Nobel Prize winner in physics, was offered a little sabbatical, some payment, to go to Juhu from Berkeley, spend a month and a half of his summer, and study the Sankhya philosophy of Lord Kapiladeva directly as it's found in the Bhagavatam, to see if there's anything in science that would establish that can't be so. Falsifiability is the term. And Rasaraj described this man was, he was intense. He was up before the devotees were up for Mangalarti every morning. He didn't attend Mangalarti. But, you know, he would go from his room where he was staying on the balcony and look over the edge because, you know, they were having kirtan and he enjoyed it. You know, at 4:30 in the morning they're having singing and dancing. This is very nice. But he was already up. And all day long, for a month and a half, he read the Bhagavatam. And at the end, he wrote a little paper. And then that little paper got expanded into a little booklet and it was published, essentially saying, of all that I know about science besides my own Nobel laureate work, anything that I know about in science, there's nothing in science that would establish this as falsifiable. So that says something to the audience and the creationists versus the material scientists argument. So we may not be Nobel laureates, nor, you know, Maitreya Munis. But if we become attentive to the, you know, that, you know, the cause and effect of things. This is the cause, and that's the effect. And then this effect becomes the cause of the next effect, and so forth and so on. So we can understand the unfolding of creation and how it comes from original cause, if we're attentive. We may not be able to make a universe, but we can understand the principles behind cause of cause and effect behind the creation. And then in fact comes from the Supreme Lord. Now this non-falsifiability position, it's not proof that it's true, but it's not what happened with between the creationists and the scientists, that they present something and the creationists cannot address it. All they can do is say, well, the Bible doesn't say that. It says something else. So, it's compelling. It will help the persons who ask why questions to understand the answers to those why questions as far as the creation is concerned, and if it can address those things that are within our experience, it lends some credibility and faith to those persons towards those things that are beyond our experience. It helps qualify us to understand. Now this is another reason. It helps qualify us to understand the personal nature of the personality of Godhead. Because there's in Western ideology, there's a difference between theism and deism. I'm not sure which is which, but one is God creates everything and then doesn't have any further involvement in it, and another is God creates everything and has ongoing involvement in it. Ours is the latter. In fact, nothing moves without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. So how is that operating? This is Sankhya or creation understandings, and by that we can get a sense, even, you know, in worldly things, of how we're connected to the Supreme Lord. Not just based upon, you know, I feel it or the scripture says so, but both. We can feel it, the scripture says so, and we have a reasonable explanation of how it is so. It strengthens our own relationship with the personality of God on a platform that we can more immediately relate to. Right? Anything else? Yeah. They're expressing their realizations of how they got to the place where they are. They're giving credit to one who is very dear to the Lord. It's glorification of the Lord to honor those who are dear to the Lord. He's more pleased than by honoring him directly to honor those who are dear to him. The Lord's, just like the Srimad Bhagavatam itself, in the first canto, through chapters, beginning part of chapter 7, it's all like laying the foundation for what the Bhagavatam is. And the subject matter of the Bhagavatam is the personality of Godhead, and his name, fame, qualities, activities. So the sages say, Krishna Katha, please, having understood those preliminary chapters. And the first Krishna Katha that's spoken is about the Pandavas. And Prabhupada raises the question in the purport and then answers it. Why, when Sutta Goswami was asked to speak Krishna Katha, he's speaking about the Pandavas. Why, he could have spoken something directly about Krishna, but he said he's speaking about the Pandavas. What's going on? And then he answers, because the activities of the pure devotees of the Lord are completely immersed in thought of the Lord and representing the Lord, it's as good as directly speaking about the Lord. And in fact, it does. It discloses a very confidential part of the Lord's dealings in this world, dealing with his devotees in this world. How that unfolds is very, very wonderful, very confidential, very loving. That's the nature of the Lord. Very loving. So it discloses that. So they can say it in principle, as the Prachetas did, or others, or Vidura did, or just like describe the Leela and then becomes evident by example, preceptor by example. And Krishna is pleased by such praise of his devotees. Anything else? What's the best way of benefiting? Well, it starts with hearing. And there's different qualities of hearing. So when there's really effective quality of hearing, then just like what happened with Vidura, when he hears, he just hears from Maitreya, and all of his misgivings are gone. All of his misgivings are gone. Or, here's another nice example, Maharaj Rahugana heard from Jad Bharat. He was, you know, being this puffed up macho king. Hey, what are you doing with my palanquin? You are going to get it. I'm going to severely punish you. After all, I'm the master and you're the servant. And Jad Bharat starts speaking to him in such a way that his illusion is completely dispelled. So that's one of the effects of hearing. Illusion is dispelled. At least the potential for that to happen. In the case of Arugan, it was completely dispelled. Same as what's going to be happening here with Vidura. Vidura was highly learned, very wise, but he wasn't a perfected being. from hearing from Maitreya, he becomes an Uttama Adhikari personality. So effective, he can, and he did, he went back and delivered to Dhritarashtra. Whereas before he tried to do that, it wasn't effective. Circumstances were also different, but on Vidura's side also circumstances are different. So illusion is the benefit is through hearing and then applying that which one has heard. Until that, to the point where that which one hears is one's reality. Through association, we develop qualities like those with whom we associate. Sangat sanjayate kama. And through associating with pure devotees, one becomes a quality like them. And medium is hearing. And that there's, as mentioned, there's qualities of different qualities of hearing. One who hears with great eagerness, like Vidura, great respect, attentiveness. It's the perfect combination. Maitreya is very eager to speak. Vidura is very eager to hear. And the full consummation of liberated from material condition and perfectly situated in one's spiritual position, that's by the process of association with pure devotees. They can illumine the heart. Upadekshanti te gyanam gyaninas tatpadarshana. They can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. You're the only one that hasn't asked a question. Mm-hmm. Something? Not at the moment. Maybe tomorrow morning. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.